First of all, to say I thought the dinner, for those that were able to go last night, was a very relaxed, informal affair, and the speeches, even though some of them went on a little bit too long, were great. Sorry, I only nudged him this time. And so that was really good, and I think that the breakfasts and the discussions at those I sat in on the investor breakfast, and there seemed to be quite a lot of robust discussions, so hopefully both the advisory council members and the board members and staff that attended those got some advice in relation to those. So on to our second day, and we have a pretty full day, and we're going to start off by Alan summarising, having slept on it, the thoughts in relation to materiality from yesterday.
Thank you. The reason we're doing this is Joanna provides excellent summaries of what she's heard and taken out for us to take away, but we also thought it's equally important for you to hear from us what we're going out, because we're going back to our offices, taking your thoughts, writing board papers, making recommendations and so on. If we've heard and taken away different things or different emphasis, it would be frustrating for you. So the idea for this is to reflect back, and if you think I've misinterpreted some of the messages, then you should say so. This is the right time to do that. And we'll see how it goes. We thought it was a good experiment this time. So first of all, a couple of things. What we asked you today, I thought was it's not impossible, but it was yesterday, was very, very difficult. We spent 6 months pouring our heads into materiality, reading cases, all the literature and so on. We asked you in 1 hour to answer some pretty fundamental questions about materiality. I also emphasise we normally don't take technical issues like this to the Advisory Council. That's what ASAF and other four are for. But this is a rare case, and I think because materiality is so pervasive, it's one of the opportunities we have to take something more technical or bring that to you and get your feedback. The other thing I think quite clear to me, that the messages were both clear and consistent. I was surprised at, given the way we organised the groups, how consistent some of the messages were, particularly about the importance of regulators and over-disclosure, for example. The regulators themselves also talked about over-disclosure as being one of the problems. So I thought they were consistent and clear, and as you'll see in a couple of minutes when we go through, quite consistent with some of the feedback we've had from other groups as well, which is comforting for us. And just the last by way of introduction is, in a session like this, it's not necessarily walking away with 10 brand new ideas. Sometimes something will come out. There are a couple of issues in here that I thought were a little bit different, which is actually very, very helpful. But a lot of the feedback is making sure that either we're on the right track and, you know, you sort of get nudged, you know, back along in a particular direction, or if we're going in the wrong direction or there are alarm bells ringing, that that we hear that. So this is as much about us getting some comfort out of the situation as learning new things. And I think we've got both out of this, which is very helpful. So you've got a lot of pushing of buttons because there's stuff on the right coming up, Ada. So definition. There are three things, really. It's definition, education, material, and behaviour are the three biggest things. In terms of definition, I think that, yes, what we heard is, yes, we should retain a definition. It does provide a good baseline, and there's absolutely no harm in having one. So we should actually keep one. We were never suggesting we would actually take it away, but we thought we should actually at least go for the extremes of having just the word materiality right up to full-blown definition and lots of support, and we're asking where we should draw that line. And I think it's a consistent message we've had with other people is we do need a definition in there at least. Whether it should be revised, one of the themes that came up throughout all the groups is this over-disclosure problem. And two parts of the definition that feed into that a little bit are the threshold. And quite a few people within the groups actually identify that the word could is used in our definition of materiality, which is very low threshold. The way it's interpreted by particularly some of the US we speak to, as long as anybody in this room might think it's a possibility, then it's in. And so it's too low a threshold. Now, the second part of that is that there's an asymmetry in there because the definition refers to whether or not you should... I've forgotten the word, Christy. Exclude or include?
Exclude.
Exclude information.
Omit.
Omit information. So it's the definition says whether you should omit It doesn't talk about whether you should include because it's helpful, but just omit because it could be misleading to do otherwise. And the question that comes up is whether we should get more symmetry in there and have greater focus on including, so and it's not so much a barrier to include, but you have to think about including information. And the other point is the definition needs to be robust and defendable, and you'll see as a theme that comes with education, it has to fit in with other definitions that might exist in other regimes. So feedback we had from outreach and other places, yep, we need a definition. We should at least consider the current wording. It doesn't mean that we should revise it, but we should consider the threshold. That's the could versus would, the exclude, include, and also the user focus about whether we should be more focused about which users we should look at. There's another comment that I need to just relay to you how difficult it is. I think we can have lots of debates about could versus would, but some groups in Indonesia, for example, has told me that it translates to the same word anyway. So it doesn't matter which word you use, it's far too subtle. If you mean could with a higher threshold, explain that. So the role of education material, support material, further explanations, it's like significant, important, all those words. Don't just use the word, actually give a little bit of life to it, say what you mean by that in some way. So we can't be too subtle with our language. Okay, second one is education material and other support. I think it's a strong message that is necessary and would be helpful. Most groups actually mentioned illustrative examples and cases, and probably a stronger reference to that type of support material than any other group we've spoken to. So I got a greater emphasis from the general group here. Be careful about too much detail, which came down to bright lines, no. And that was consistent across all the groups. Also, as well as doing some education support material, one group in particular mentioned that we could go back into some specific standards, that was the regulator group, and because it might be that we could elaborate or show how to apply materiality in a particular context. So it's not just about what I call general support material, but now and again we should think about the odd standard. Now, for the general support material, I think the lack of formality or authority was quite appealing to virtually everybody in that don't bake this into a standard to say it's part of IFRS. So that was appealing. But I think just about the same token, every group expressed in a slight one way or the other some concerns about the lack of due process that goes with creating that. In my words, anything we produce, you'd welcome as long as we get it right. And the question is, do we give you an opportunity to review that to make sure we've got it right? So there's a bit of a trade-off, and it's one that we're aware of from other groups, but it's helpful, given that we discussed this in a previous meeting, about this authority coming of anything coming out of 30 Cannon Street. I thought it was a helpful and consistent message. The other thing, too, is that a point was made, the education material can help preparers establish an internal framework. So it can be useful. It's mainly going to be useful for preparers, both in terms of preparing the how you actually get to the financial statements, but on the other hand, stepping back a little bit, it can help them with their internal processes. And feedback from others is consistent with that as well. As I said, that the illustrative examples and cases was something that was particularly emphasised here. Now, behaviours, the messages here, I think across the board, it's a large part of the problem, or major part. It leads to over-disclosure. Even that term was helpful, actually. We talk about, getting complexity and confusion. Just the word over-disclosure was one that I saw come from several groups here. And it's very important that we don't get important information being swamped by immaterial information. It takes courage from leadership. The suggestion was the ISB could support good practice. Perhaps I'll nip into a comment on that. It's difficult for us to pick winners. I think it's a very dangerous thing. I've had some experience in other organisations where they've done... there was a book in an organisation I worked in called The K Factor, and that was all the top companies, and I think about 9 out of the 10 had collapsed within about 5 years. It's not great when you say this is a great set of financial statements, then you find either a fraud or a failure, and the company actually doesn't perform very well. So don't pick winners. You're going to warn me. Oh, it was, yeah. what we can do is encourage debate and provide sort of environments where we can get people sitting up and actually debating these issues as well. It suggested we could challenge good practice, and that's not conducive to good disclosure. I think related to that was perhaps getting some statistics about how often regulators challenge materiality. Hard for us to do, because not all of that is public information. We'd have to rely on the regulators helping us with some of that. But it's also, I think, something we're not that comfortable doing necessarily. I'll try to give you an example to show you my reticence in this. I was at the research forum a couple of weeks ago. There was a paper that was involved some work that was partly sponsored by an organisation, and it looked at compliance with IFRS 3, that's the business combination disclosures. And essentially the thesis was this, is that there is a list of disclosures. They are all mandatory, and they therefore measured compliance with the mandatory disclosures. And they were trying to see whether or not compliance with the mandatory disclosures reduced your cost of capital. And I think it was the joke, Russ Golden from the FASB sent me an email and said, congratulations, New Zealand's top of the list, 97% compliance. And I sent an email back and said, maybe they don't understand materiality. And my major concern was that there was an organisation, a reputable organisation, was saying that compliance with mandatory disclosures specified in a standard, it meant that there was a failure of compliance when people didn't present that information. And that's a worry. But it's hard for us to stand up here and start to criticise different organisations on that basis. I'd rather provide some sort of fora to get the debate going where others will see it's not good behaviour. So it's a tricky one for us. And the other thing too is with behaviour, people come from different backgrounds, and that's going to indicate when we come back, and we should perhaps set up some events like the disclosure forum, but we're going to have to be, the dialogue has to be dependent on the types of parties we deal with. Some jurisdictions, as we said yesterday, have actually established a currency equivalent, said anything above this number is material, or anything greater than 1.5% of revenue is material, period, and that's it. And so the types of discussion you have will depend on, I think, some of the jurisdictions as well. The other was drafting of standards, some sundry items. There's some good suggestions there that we should have a look at the drafting of some of our standards. In particular, listing information that could be helpful. In other words, we say, here are 15 items that could be helpful to understanding something. That suffers from the same threshold problem that the generic definition of materiality suffers from. So IFRS 14, I think, is probably better, because it says, and this is from the previous session that we had yesterday, it says the following components would usually be relevant. So we're trying to put some probability in there as well. So we've got to be very careful about the way we do the drafting. We should also look at the standards I put a direct quote in there, look at the standards because that would attack the source. And I think what's very comforting about that is that I think that tells us that materiality works with the standards. It's not materiality as a definition by itself, but it links in quite clearly with the standards themselves. And that's where a lot of the source of the problem is coming from. And we should perhaps start to target some more problematic standards. I think I indicated yesterday the New Zealand Standards Set is going to try and pick up one or two for us as an experiment offline to try and see whether we can improve the wording there. There was a suggestion that we try to align with other requirements, regulators and FASB. That's particularly challenging. We actually don't necessarily want to align with some other regulators. I think that we actually want some to change their behaviour and remove bright lines. That would be a positive outcome for me. So it's not necessarily, this will be a not very helpful comment. We want to align with the good regulators. And we've got to tell you what good actually means. The other thing too, just remember the FASB has limited guidance in there. In fact, it's arguable they don't have any guidance. They rely on the work the SEC has done. So you could equally argue that we should try to think about guidance and education and support that others like the SEC has. My comment, and I see Julie is here today as well, is that the SEC actually has some very helpful, very practical guidance and support for applying materiality. I think historically what sometimes has happened is that I hope I get the right dates, but I think it's 1976 was the main court case, the Supreme Court, defining materiality in the US. In 1978, the FASB, when they write their framework, essentially codified the decision of the court in their definition of materiality. And a good practice can be for the standard setter to assist to now and again, periodically, codify good practice that's emerged in other places. So I think when we develop, assuming we develop some educational material, we need to make sure that we look at work that's been done by others that's stood the test of time and make sure that if we're helping others, that we do so in a way that's consistent with that other material. And I think the last... got two more slides. One that has come up, it's actually far more difficult for smaller entities to change practice. They haven't got the resources. They've only got one, maybe two people doing their financial reporting, so they can't get others to do the work. It's actually hard work. They don't necessarily have the experience or the confidence because they're having to stand up to auditors, for example, or stand up to regulators. So it's really quite difficult for them. The small caps have told us the same thing, and the thing that we need to think about generally with disclosures and I think with the materiality is sometimes if we can target the more problematic standards, the one that feel more burdensome to most entities, and I always say all entities, but you can proportionately help the smaller ones even more because they're the ones feeling squashed by this, so they will benefit more. And I think the French have done some work on the small caps on that. I'm assuming on the same thesis that it's like people say with the SMEs, why don't you write the standards so that everybody can read them? It helps everybody. It happens to help the smaller ones more proportionately than the bigger ones. But I think that also says something about the other thing. Preparers are the best position to make the judgments. Ultimately, the regulators or the courts are going to judge the judgments that the preparers made. And audit committees are an important link, but what I think that also highlights is that it actually doesn't matter who takes the lead. The experience I've had, and you hear nice stories around here as well, is that sometimes it's the CFO, sometimes it's the CEO, sometimes it's the chair of the audit committee as a representative of the board, sometimes it's the board taking the lead. Sometimes it's an accounting firm going in with their clients and saying we've got a streamlined way of thinking about things and encouraging them to change their thinking. So I don't think there's a silver bullet here about which particular person, but everybody in that sort of, I call it the financial reporting supply chain, has the opportunity to try and challenge or change. So, and I've heard good examples on all parts of that supply chain here. So I think to summarise, Joanna was absolutely right yesterday. The two common themes were over-disclosure. Every group emphasised that. It comes down to behaviour. We need to create incentives to change. And the third thing is, that's part of it, we do need to educate. The ISB should be responsible for some general educational support, and we should continue to engage with auditors and regulators, trying to create other environments where we do talk and discuss and try to encourage people to change, but we're going to have to vary that by the audience as well. So that's what I got out of it yesterday.
Thank you very much, Alan, and Christy, I'm sure, for pulling that together. So, and I guess just for advisory council members, Alan has summed up what he heard. Is there any, obviously everyone had slightly different views from the groups, is there any fundamental, as he says, what he's got now, he and Christy and the team are going to go and do is use that information in developing further. Is there any problem with anything that he's summed up there in far more detail than I did around effectively what they're going to take from this group in terms of going forward?
I wouldn't say problem, because you asked if there's any problem. I don't have a problem per se. I thought the overview was, is what I heard in the sessions yesterday. The one thing that I would underscore and is what I told you yesterday, Alan. It's not, over disclosure doesn't relate just to the financial statements. It's the full reporting suite. When I look at a lot of companies, a company that I'm currently with, I have maybe 100 pages of financial statements out of a 500-page annual report. So I think that whole notion of over-disclosure goes more broadly, and I think the context that this particular over-disclosure effort has to be in the context of the full reporting suite. So I just wanted to underscore that.
Rudolph, and I think that fits very well into the integrated reporting and the whole stuff that we were talking about yesterday. And you've obviously prompted a couple of more thoughts here. Charles?
Thanks, Joanna. Alan, I absolutely agree with you that the board should not be in the role of picking winners, to use your terminology, but given that there are a number of organisations that would be interested in improving their disclosure and their reporting, and it's a common ambition, and in some areas, for example, the remuneration report, which all investors look at, it's the one part of the the annual report that everyone looks at. When you engage with proxy advisors who are very influential, you often ask them, well, who are the companies that you think we should be looking at their report? They're not advocating that you should report like XYZ. They're just pointing to, well, if you want to improve your REM report, here's a number of companies you could look at. And I would have thought the board could do the same when you become aware of companies that are making progress in terms of improved disclosure.
Christoph?
There was one term that was mentioned a few times yesterday. That is the term hindsight, and the challenge of how do I consider hindsight, how do I live with the regulator when reviewing having hindsight, so that this is an issue that everyone has to face, and some more clarification on what relevance has hindsight in assessing materiality.
And Thomas.
Well, thank you. Just looking at this one page which we have in front of us, at least we here, not probably you, I don't know. The first bullet, over-disclosure. Over-disclosure is a point, and it's probably also something which is relevant then for the question of small caps and the question, is there an overload for the disclosure? But we should not just describe it as an over-disclosure problem. I think it's more a question of the quality of disclosure. So it's not just cutting pages, and that's something which came up in our group, that we have to look at the quality of notes, of disclosures, and not only about the pages. That's, I think, which is important, and that also comes back to the question of behavior, change of behavior, that you have to use your judgment to get good notes and good disclosures. Probably just to add a little bit for the first bullet, not to make it too short.
I think that's a very good point, and again, it's just being careful with the words that we use. We know, sitting here, what we meant by over-disclosure, but it's not over-disclosure per se. It's relevant, you know, ensuring we get only relevant disclosure. Yeah. Garth, sorry, missed you.
I think when we look at the whole issue of education, I think the one item that was discussed in our group, which didn't seem to have come across here, is the need to home in on what is this user. If we are trying to apply materiality, maybe some of the educational guidance needs to say from what perspective this user is. So I think that could be narrowed as well. And I also think one other area that the ISB could look at is when looking at the disclosures, is why might these disclosures be helpful? If we don't know why these disclosures were put into the standard in the first place, it makes it more difficult to know when it might be relevant and when it might not be relevant.
Thank you, Garth. Okay, I think that we will wrap up on that session. So thank you very much, Alan and Christy. Yeah. And we now welcome Barbara Davidson, who